Registry Matters is an independent production. The opinions and ideas here are that of the host and do not reflect the opinions of any other organization. If you have problems with these thoughts, FYP.
Recording live from FYP Studios East and West. No extras this time. Transmitting across the internet, this is episode 335 of Registry Matters. Larry! It's just you and me. How are you tonight?
Doing awesome. Looking forward to having a spectacularly upbeat program tonight.
Upbeat? No. Sorry, you're Mr. Doom and Gloom. That's never going to work. How could you ever be upbeat?
Well, tonight is going to be upbeat. You'll see.
Okay. Well, someone in chat has already said you must be sick. Please make sure you head over to wherever your podcasting app is and give us a 5-star review. That would help us get the podcast recommended to other people. Of course, if you do the same, like and subscribe and thumbs up on YouTube, that also helps share us with other people. You know, Larry, I've been hearing that a large majority of people, when they are following a podcast, they will actually watch it on television.
I've not heard that.
Yeah, I've been hearing that lately. So as if you were watching Bill O'Reilly or something like that, which is essentially a podcast, and you would just turn on the TV and watch the podcast when it comes out.
I wasn't aware of that, but I'm looking forward to one day being on camera when I get young again.
Okay, so never. You know, we could probably do some things. There's a lot of like smoothing and stuff like that we can do in cameras. We can make you look very young.
Okay, let's try it.
Well, tell me, what are we doing this episode?
Well, it's just Mr. Gloom and Doom this episode. Chance is unable to join us this week. He had a long trip across the state of California for a case on Thursday and Friday and is exhausted. Our plans are we're going to cover a case from Pennsylvania dealing with a recidivist PFR that upheld lifetime incarceration without parole. I think that's positive. Right?
Sure. Yes, it does.
Yes. Also, we will be reviewing the just concluded New Mexico legislative session. It ended about 5 hours ago.
Wow. Okay. Is that it? That's all we're doing?
That's all we're doing, unless something else pops up during this episode that we want to focus on.
I see. All right. Well, okay. Well, let's do this Pennsylvania Superior Court case that was just released, what did you say, yesterday? Now, in that short period of time, Larry, I have read it. I ran it through Notebook LM. I have had ChatGPT help me summarize things. I read it word for word. Now, it is definitely something we need to discuss. This case is the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania versus Joseph Davis. And I don't want to hear any excuses about it being last minute. Are you ready to explain every aspect of this case?
Not really.
All right, well, get ready. You have some time. I'm going to read for another 20 or so seconds, and you can scan through and get things ready. I've got questions for you. I'm going to set it up, and you'll go from there. Joseph Davis appealed from a judgment and sentence imposed following his convictions for 2 counts each of sexual abuse of children. The actual conduct was distribution of sea child prawn and criminal use of a communications facility. Davis argued on appeal the imposition of a mandatory sentence of confinement for life without the possibility of parole violates the U.S., the United States, and the Pennsylvania constitutions. What do you think about that setup?
That's fantastic. Just keep going. You don't really need me.
Nope. All right. As I read through the case, though, I noticed that Davis had previous convictions going back to the 1980s. And also, if I also read that part correctly, he offended again after having his dwelling searched in 2015. Did I also get that right?
You did. I think the years are off. The 80s are right, and I think he got intervened on his first encounter on this recent episode was in 2014. And then while pending, he got another knock at the door in 2015. But otherwise, that is correct.
Isn't this why we can't have nice things, though? Like, if all million of us are doing well and one guy does bad, doesn't that just ruin it for all million of us?
Yes. This guy is, yeah, well, I'm hoping you can admit that this case is funny.
I don't think it's funny at all. Definitely not. Let's get into a little bit more of the details than we normally do to the uniqueness of the case. So if you have sensitive ears, maybe you should put some cotton in it or something. So back in July of 2014, the Pennsylvania Office of the Attorney General Child Predator Section conducted an online investigation on an e-mule network. I know you have no idea what that is.
You'd be correct. I have never heard that before.
It's a file sharing thing. All right. You've probably heard of Napster.
Vaguely.
Okay. It's similar-ish. All right. And a direct one-on-one connection was made at an IP address. The IP address is listed, so 98.235.69.243, that was making downloads available through a direct connection. Special Agent Justin Led viewed the file. A search warrant was directed to Comcast Cable to release the subscriber's information for the IP address. The IP address was determined to be Davis's at Davis's home address, and a search warrant was obtained for the residence. And a search was conducted of Davis's premises. And at the time of the search, Davis was provided with his Miranda warnings and advised law enforcement that he was the sole user of the only computer at the residence and that there was no child porn on his computer. Then Davis indicated that he was previously arrested for child porn and that he did his time for that. So if he did his time back then, this is 2014, what happened next?
Well, I'm fairly certain that at some point we'll be discussing how he, despite him being read his Miranda rights, he talked to the police. But while this case was pending, I look at the, it's a little more than a year later, on October 4th, 2015, the Pennsylvania Office of the Attorney General Child Predator Unit was conducting an online investigation on the e-mule networks again. A file with a IP address I'm not going to read was making downloads available through a direct connection, which I don't have any idea what that means. The download was described as details, by details we are not going to read on a family program. I mean, it was bad. Comcast Cable Communications identified the subscriber as none other than Joseph Davis at Davis's home address. A search warrant was obtained and a search of the Davis's apartment was conducted. Davis was again provided with Miranda rights and stated that he lived alone in the apartment and rarely had visitors. Do you mind reading what happened next?
Sure. Well, Davis stated that he knew how sting operations worked and that the Postal Service got him for the same reasons. I'm assuming that if the Postal Service was involved, because we've shuttered that institution, that this was something back in the 80s?
Yes, that was for his conviction back then. Now, folks, we were living in a different era then, and people who were looking for prawn back then, they did it through the mail. So that's why the Postal Service comes in, because of the ancient nature of his previous convictions.
Have we closed that worthless institution yet?
No, but it's not going to be long.
He made an additional statement as to the legality of child porn in places like Japan and Czech Republic and did not understand why it was illegal in the United States. He further indicated that he believed you should be able to watch whatever you choose in the privacy of your own home. Davis refused to give the password to the computer that was found at his residence. The computer contained a TrueCrypt encrypted password. Good luck on that one.
What does that mean about the password? Is that good or bad, or what does that mean?
If you have, it probably doesn't even really matter. So TrueCrypt is a really, exceptionally strong, is it military grade encryption? Sure. Let's say it's military grade encryption that, as far as I know, doesn't have vulnerabilities. You encrypt the hard drive itself, Larry. If you don't have the password, you're not getting to the data.
Would that be similar to what happened when Trump was president the first term and he blasted Apple for not opening up an encrypted phone for the
it is similar. Yes. Okay. Similar-ish, yeah. It's along those lines. And then there's a backdoor company that had a vulnerability, a way to break into it, and the FBI, whoever, CIA, whoever bought it, they bought it for like $1 million. They bought the ability to crack it, and they got into the phone that way.
So, but the irony is the Pennsylvania Supreme Court upheld his Fifth Amendment right to refuse to provide the password, and that was in the case called Commonwealth versus Davis and decided in 2019. Now, all I can say, it must be a bunch of damn liberal pointy heads on that Pennsylvania Supreme Court.
Now, before we get into the legal analysis, I wanted to point out that Davis gave statements that he enjoyed watching Prawn in the privacy of his home. He gave statements that the United States is too tough on Prawn, and in other countries, it is not illegal. He excused his behavior by stating, "I don't see what the big F-U-C dot 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 I-N-G deal is. I'm not talking about raping them. Do I make child Prawn?" I have a feeling that these statements didn't really work well for him.
Yeah, that would be an understatement. They certainly did not.
And then he took his case to trial, Larry. After the jury convicted Davis, the Commonwealth filed notice of its intent to seek imposition of mandatory lifetime sentences without the possibility of parole on the basis that Davis had two prior convictions for receiving child Prawn. The notice stated that in 1987, Davis had been convicted in federal court of receipt of child Prawn through the mail. And then in 1991, he was convicted of the same violation and sentenced to 5 years mandatory sentence due to his prior conviction. Davis is probably not a very attractive appellant. Would you agree with that?
That's a major understatement. He's a horrible appellant.
Oh, my God. Okay, well, then Davis challenged the application of the mandatory sentences, raising the constitutionality of the statute and arguing its application constituted what, of course, cruel and unusual punishment. The court rejected Davis's challenge and sentenced him to two concurrent mandatory terms of lifetime confinement without the possibility of parole for his convictions. Holy moly. What were the issues on his appeal?
Well, Davis raised a single issue, whether imposition of mandatory sentence of life without the possibility of parole under 42 Pennsylvania, whatever that is, blah, 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 is unconstitutional because it is grossly disproportionate to the crime committed. It constitutes cruel and unusual punishment and violates the United States Constitution, Eighth Amendment, and the Pennsylvania Constitution.
Now, over the years, you have thought about, pontificated, speculated that challenges should be narrow and targeted to one or two issues. You know, he appears to have followed that advice. Can you at least admit that he followed your advice? He's a listener of the program, as I understand it.
I hope he's a listener, and he did keep his challenge narrow and targeted. Unfortunately, he does not have good facts on his side, nor is the law on his side.
So then Davis argued his mandatory life sentences without the possibility of parole violate the Eighth Amendment of the United States Constitution and Article 1, Section 13 of the Pennsylvania Constitution. He asserted the sentences are grossly disproportionate to the gravity of the offense to sentences similarly situated in this Commonwealth and to sentences for the same crime in other jurisdictions. Now that seems reasonable to me. That seems like a credible argument.
It could possibly be a credible argument for someone who had not been engaged in viewing and distributing Prawn for decades, and for a person who had not professed that it's his right to do so.
And then regarding the gravity of the other offenses, Davis argued that he did not solicit minors, nor was it even alleged that he attempted to have contact with minors. He did point out, though, that he does not have a criminal history that involves any violence or direct contact with minors. He asserted that although the statute is aimed at preventing recidivism, he had been without an incursion in the justice system for at least 20 years and not involved again until the age of 59 or 60 years, respectively. That's not compelling?
No. Davis has not put forth anything that seems very compelling. Davis also contended that the Commonwealth did not establish that he disseminated child Prawn beyond that downloaded by the investigators. Now, you have to admit, that's not very credible. He only provided child Prawn to investigators. The funny thing is, I don't think he would have known that they were investigators at the time, or he would not have provided the Prawn sharing to them. I mean, so that's not a winning argument, is it?
No, it is not. Davis also argued that the life sentence is disproportionate to the gravity of the offense because it is vastly different than the guideline sentence, which was 36 to 48 months in the standard range. Now, given his PRS of 2, what is a PRS?
I suspect it's a sentence score that they run through the computer. You know, you're big on computers and everybody should be sentenced by computer. So I suspect that this is some sort of mechanical score that came up from them putting his background and the the data that they put in, but I'm not sure what that means. Maybe a Pennsylvanian can help us.
Nobody here from Pennsylvania at the moment. All right. Well, then further, he argued that even if he had been sentenced to the consecutive statutory minimum sentence on each count, including maximum sentences of 5 to 10 years on each abuse count, his aggregate sentence would only be 17 to 34 years. Come on. Now, again, he has a point. Please admit that.
He does have a point, but unfortunately, the laws and sentencing schemes are not required to be consistent and fair.
Now, repeat that. Did you say that laws and sentencing schemes are not required to be rational or fair?
I did say that. Let me give you an example that we can dig into. The age of consent in New Mexico is 16 in most circumstances. This means adults, regardless of their age, can have consensual sex with a 16-year-old. The exceptions are for those who are in authority over that minor, like if you were to be a school counselor, teacher, an employer. Then those must be 18 to have consensual sex with an adult. But even though you can have consensual and lawful sex with a 16-year-old, the very same person that was allowed to have consensual sex cannot possess a photo of the private parts of the minor. That will send you to prison for a long period of time because you're in possession of child porn, and it'll put you on the PFR registry. Now, can you see some dislogic with that? You can touch it, grope it, do everything imaginable, to, but you can't have a picture of it.
We talked about that case, I don't know, 5 years ago, the kid in North Carolina, he had sent pictures of his junk to his girlfriend, and then he turns 18, so now he's got underage junk of his junk, and he was convicted of having CP of his own junk.
Yes, and as I've brought this to the attention of the inconsistency, I quickly reversed and ran when the lawmakers I approached said, well, you know what we need to do is we need to raise the age of consent, because that's just too important of a decision to be making available to a 16-year-old that they can consent how to engage their body. And so they didn't have any desire to get rid of the inconsistency by making it legal to possess a photo. They chose the course of action would be to make it harder. So, like I say, laws don't have to be rational or fair.
Now, just to sidetrack that just for a minute, given the ease of taking pictures of anybody's junk, how at some point in time, we just have to say we can't fight this, and you can't prosecute people for something that you can, in 30 seconds or less, be committing a crime on your digital device in your house. That seems ridiculous.
It is, but you remember we talk about how short we are of resources and how we would like to have our officers out doing real criminal law enforcement, but we have time to worry about this kind of stuff. So maybe we're just not quite as short of resources as people would like to believe.
All right. Well, okay. So Davis also argued that he would be subject to lifetime SORNA registration and the Commonwealth could restrict his use of electronic devices and the internet. Not compelling with that one either?
Not at all. We as a society don't want him viewing or distributing porn. Lifetime in prison will almost certainly prevent future recidivism. Can you at least admit that?
I'm pretty sure that he's not going to have a lot of access to any level of porn while he's locked up.
He might be able to smuggle in some paper copies of adult-oriented magazines, but I'm doubting he's going to get any illegal porn into the prisons.
And at this point, it's hard to give even a flip phone that someone can suitcase reasonably well, and then you only have like a one-inch screen to look at some grainy picture that's not really going to work out well.
Suitcase, can you expand upon what that means?
I am not expanding on what suitcasing means. You can imagine suitcasing. Davis argued that even an individual convicted of third-degree murder is only subject to 20 to 40 years confinement. Davis argued that he should not be subject to a greater sentence because his crime did not involve direct contact with a minor or involvement in the production of child porn. He contended that while his conduct can be viewed as creating a demand for child porn, his sentence is not likely to decrease the supply as he did not pay money for the porn he accessed, and the creators of CP are not driven by monetary gain. Now, how about that argument?
Well, first of all, I didn't understand that they didn't make child porn for economic gain. I thought they sold that stuff. But even if they don't sell it, it might be a good argument from a policy perspective, but it's not a solid legal argument. We the people get to make the tough laws if we choose to do that. Laws are not required to work, and they're not required to be lenient.
So then Davis challenged the constitutionality of the statute. Now, what is the standard of review?
You're getting at into this deep weed stuff about whether it's a rational basis or strict scrutiny. As the court stated, the constitutionality of a statute presents a pure question of law. And they cited Commonwealth versus Thompson from 2014 Pennsylvania Supreme Court. Thus, our standard of review is de novo, which means a brand new review without any deference. And our scope of review is plenary. We presume duly enacted legislation is constitutional, and we will not find a statute unconstitutional unless it clearly and palpably and plainly violates the Constitution. Any doubt will be resolved in favor of the state's constitutionality, and that's on pages 6 to 7 of the opinion.
The statute Davis sought to invalidate is section 9718.2A2, a third strike law. This provides a mandatory minimum of life imprisonment for a person who have been convicted 3 times of an enumerated PFR-type offense, and that's in section 9718.2, and it reads as follows, where the person had, at the time of the commission of the current offense, previously been convicted of 2 or more offenses arising from separate criminal transactions set forth in section 9799.14 or equivalent crimes under the laws of this Commonwealth, in effect at the time of the commission of the offense or equivalent crimes in another jurisdiction. The person shall be sentenced to a term of how long, Larry? Life imprisonment, notwithstanding any other provision for this title or another statute to the contrary.
Now, I was looking at that. It is indeed very harsh, but it is rational if you believe that this is a deterrence. And to me, it's pretty straightforward and clear. He was facing a mandatory life sentence. Now, the only thing that I really push back on is requiring judges to impose a particular sentence. But sure, this is what they did. The voters and the governorship of Pennsylvania, don't know what years these were put on the books, but the people of Pennsylvania chose to make this. And clearly, there's no ambiguity of the two different occasions. He had one in 87. He had one in 91, and then he had 2 simultaneously within about 15 months. That does tend to suggest he's got a problem.
I would say that there would be a high propensity for recidivism from this individual.
But that's the reason he actually rolled the dice and went to trial. He had nothing to lose. If he pled guilty, he was getting life. If he went to trial, he was getting life. I would say he had nothing to lose, so that's exactly what I would have done.
Certainly, certainly. The court stated, we first note that a party challenging the constitutionality of a statute must establish either that the statute is facially unconstitutional, that is, unconstitutional in any application, or unconstitutional as applied in the present circumstances. Thompson, 106th, amended 3rd, is that right? Amended?
Atlantic 3rd, that would be what that says.
Atlantic? How do you know that A is Atlantic? All right. Well, Thompson, 106 Atlantic 3rd at 763 and 64. Here, Davis does not argue that this statute is unconstitutional when applied to all sentences flowing from 3rd convictions for enumerated sexual crimes. Rather, Davis argued that the sentence of life imprisonment without the possibility of parole is unconstitutional when applied to his sentence because he did not directly abuse minors. He did not commit any violent offenses, did not engage in the creation of CP, or pay or receive money for the prawn he possessed, and committed his previous offenses 2 decades ago. This appears to not have changed this to an as-applied challenge.
It actually did. It was he was saying it was facial, but the court did change it to as-applied because facial means there's no set of circumstances. But it's pretty clear to me what Davis was thinking. Davis was thinking that he wanted the court to invent parts of the law that weren't there. He wanted them to say that a 3rd sexual offense had to be, even though the statute, you read anything, did you read anything that says that it has to be violent? Did you have to touch a minor?
It didn't say anything about a contact. It just said convicted of a sexual offense.
Yes, and he wanted the judges to legislate from the bench and say the judges to limit the scope of the, in essence, this is a third strike law. And he wanted them to cap the scope of that. The court noted, we therefore confine our review to the constitution of the statute to as applied to Davis. This means they did not consider whether the statute is facially unconstitutional at all. But he was all of a sudden in favor of legislating from the bench.
So the Eighth Amendment prohibits cruel and unusual punishments. Can you at least admit that life imprisonment is cruel?
It can be, for sure, and I'd say in most cases it is. But as the court noted, this prohibition does not require strict proportionality between crime and sentence. Rather, it forbids only extreme sentences, which are grossly disproportionate to the crime.
Now, how is that determined?
Well, the court answered that. They said to determine whether a sentence is grossly disproportionate, a court must employ a three-pronged test by examining, 1, the gravity of the offense and the harshness of the penalty, 2, the sentences imposed on other criminals in the same jurisdiction, and 3, the sentences imposed for a commission of the same crime in other jurisdictions.
And all three prongs are equally important?
No, they're not. The court stated, a court need not reach the second and third prongs of the test unless a threshold comparison of the crime committed and the sentence imposed leads to an inference of gross disproportionality. And can you just go ahead and read the next segment? I was going to read it, but you can do it.
Sure. When considering the gravity of an offense in comparison to the sentence imposed under a recidivist statute, we must consider the state's legitimate penological goal in imposing dramatically enhanced sentences for habitual offenders and to take into account the defendant's history of recidivism. Study Ewing versus California with a bunch of numbers, 538 U.S., 11, 28, 29, that's from 2003. A state has an interest in dealing in a, harsher manner with those who by repeated criminal acts have shown that they are simply incapable of conforming to the norms of society as established by its criminal law.
And they also pointed out in that same case at page 30, finding recidivist statute imposing 25 years to life for multiple violent felonies constitutional where the defendant stole 3 golf clubs, stating that the statute reflects rational legislative judgment entitled to deference that offenders who have committed serious or violent felonies and who continue to commit felonies must be incapacitated. And like I say, I think his child porn days are pretty much behind him. For this reason, successful Eighth Amendment challenges to recidivist sentencing statutes are very rare.
The U.S. Supreme Court has held that lifetime in prison imposed on habitual offenders is unconstitutional. Did they consider that?
They did. And they cited a case called Salome. And they said, I had not read that case, but they say, we recognize that in Salome, the United States Supreme Court struck down a recidivist statute that imposed life confinement without the possibility of parole. The statute at issue in that case there made a felony conviction subject to life in prison without parole when the defendant had been convicted of at least 3 prior crimes that were felonies. The defendant in that case had a record of nonviolent offenses and had pleaded guilty to passing a $100 bad check. The court found the crime was one of the most passive felonies a person could commit, and it involved neither violence nor threat of violence and did not involve a large monetary sum. The defendant's prior crimes were so relatively minor, noting that only capital punishment would be a greater penalty. That is not the same as recidivist child porn distribution and creation.
All right. Since we've been covering this for the whole show for like over 20 minutes, we need to get out of here. Now, let me read the conclusion, what the court stated. In contrast, as stated above, Davis's distribution of CP was not relatively minor criminal conduct. Moreover, Davis's previous convictions were for the same type of gravely serious criminal conduct, not unrelated minor offenses. Finally, even after 2 prior convictions, Davis is remorseless and still operates under the belief that his conduct should not be criminalized. In this scenario, we find no unconstitutionality in the application of the statute to permanently incapacitate Davis due to his inability to conform to the law surrounding CP. Since this is an intermediate appellate court, should he file a cert petition to the Pennsylvania Supreme Court?
I fail to see what purpose that would serve.
And that seems to suggest that you do not favor any sort of further litigation.
I do not.
Well, all right then. Do you want to have any other thoughts on this before we move over to talk about the legislative wrap-up?
Well, I will express my condolences to a person who was unable to get the help. If he sought it, I don't know if he sought the help that he needed or if he didn't realize he needed any help. He's not likely to get the help he needs now. He's now been incapacitated. And in my view, he's not likely to receive any leniency because of a number of factors that we covered. So this man will likely pass away in prison. And it's a tragedy because now he's an old guy. And prison's not fun for anybody, but particularly not for an older person. It's not a great place
to be. He's 70, I think we said.
I think he's in his 60s, but yeah, he's not a young person.
I thought we said somewhere that he was 69. Okay.
59.
Oh, 59. Well, then he's got a long way to go.
Yep.
They'll just call him Pops.
Are you a first-time listener of Registry Matters? Well, then make us a part of your daily routine and subscribe today. Just search for Registry Matters through your favorite podcast app. Hit the subscribe button and you're off to the races. You can now enjoy hours of sarcasm and snark from Andy and Larry on a weekly basis. Oh, and there's some excellent information thrown in there too. Subscribing also encourages others of you people to get on the bandwagon and become regular Registry Matters listeners. So what are you waiting for? Subscribe to Registry Matters right now. Help us keep fighting and continue to say FYP.
Well, moving over then, let's talk about your state now. It's the you people. And so we're going to talk about your legislative session that is wrapped up. It's been a few weeks now, hasn't it, since it's wrapped up?
No, it concluded at noon today.
This is one of your 60-day sessions. You have they go back and forth between 30 and 60. Is that what I have right?
You do, yes.
All right. Well, how did you people do?
We did fantastic.
So I know you had a plethora of bills to fight. Let's go through some of them. So you had House Bill 73, Childhood Sexual Abuse Statute of Limitations. Now, this proposed legislation would have amended Section 37-1-30, New Mexico, what is SA?
Statutes Annotated.
Oh, so Statutes Annotated to eliminate statute of limitations for civil actions for personal injury due to childhood sexual abuse. Currently, limitations for these civil actions are based on the victim's age or the date that the abuse was first disclosed to a medical provider. Did it pass?
No, it did not.
Come again? So I see in the history that it has passed the House of Representatives unanimously. That means it didn't make it through the Senate?
It died in the Senate.
You also had House Bill 86, which would have dramatically expanded the definition of human trafficking. Did it pass?
No, it did not. It could not even get out of the House Judiciary Committee.
And that's even better than having it go to a floor vote?
Way better, because if it can't get out of committee, you never get to vote on the floor.
And you were also battling Bill 87, and that is a non-consensual touching clarification. Did that pass?
It did make it through the entire process. It passed the House, and it passed the Senate Judiciary Committee. And it was on the floor of the Senate, and it died on the Senate floor calendar. The time just simply ran out, and they didn't get a chance to take a vote. But everybody voted for it, and they look good. They can tell their constituents they voted for it, but man, we just ran out of time.
Can you dig into that more about what that time limit, how that actually works?
Well, our process is going to send a proposal through at least four committees. Each chamber is going to get two committee referrals for a bill. So this bill would have been vetted in two committees in the House, then on the floor of the House, and then across the rotunda. Well, they didn't make it through that process until very late. So then they pared it down to just the Senate Judiciary Committee. And time was already very short, so the Senate Judiciary Committee didn't get it out of committee until 2 days before the session. And then it went on the floor calendar. And by then, they have such a backlog of stuff on the calendar. And the more controversial things are, the more time it takes. So they've had a lot of controversial bills, and we just ran out of time. It didn't get called up.
All right, then. Weirdly, Larry, I was personally watching House Bill 322 that proposed to increase penalties for certain crimes. Since New Mexico has an elevated crime rate, I'm assuming that it passed. It proposed to revise the criminal code to allow the death penalty for certain offenses regarding criminal sexual penetration and human trafficking. It states that in Section 1, the bill drastically writes Section 30-9-11 New Mexico Statute Annotated 1978 to impose the death penalty among other harsher sentences. And then Section 2 amends Section 30-52-1 to increase the age of a victim of commercial sexual trafficking to 18. And then finally in Section 3, it amends Section 31-18-15 to add capital punishment to sentencing authority for certain criminal sexual penetration and human trafficking. And that passed?
It did not. In fact, we killed it in the very first committee.
Moving along, you're batting 1,000 so far. You had House Bill 385, which would have permitted chemical castration of certain PFR type offenses. How far did that proposal go? How did that fare?
It didn't fare very well. It did not receive a hearing. It was dead on arrival, as I had told people when we did our pre-session review. I think I said this bill's dead on arrival, and it never got a hearing.
And moving over to Senate bills, you had Senate Bill 74, which sought to amend the lifetime for prosecuting certain crimes. And I will summarize these. We have a bunch of sections to go through. Oh my God, this one's long. So Section 1 would amend Section 30-1-8 to eliminate any criminal statute of limitations for human trafficking. So that means you could have done it in the 50s and you're still going to be prosecuted today?
Yes.
And then Section 2... regarding sexual exploitation of children by prostitution. Section 3 would amend Section 30-42-3 by redefining racketeering to include human trafficking. Section 4 proposed various modifications to Section 30-52-1, which defines the crime of human trafficking. The definition of human trafficking is expanded to by adding the terms harboring, maintaining, or patronizing. The scienter element is expanded from with knowledge to knew or should have known. Can you explain what patronizing would mean in this context?
Purchasing the services of a prostitute.
Oh, and then maintaining, like, here, honey, let me fix your hair?
Well, I would suppose that would be someone who was had a person under 18 that was helping them facilitate their trade. But there was a lot of... vagueness in this proposal, and but the part about the scienter element from knowing, they wanted to weaken it down to knew or should have known. Well, if you've hired a prostitute, already people don't like you. So if it turned out the prostitute was under 18, everyone would be able to meet that standard. They would say you should have known that they were under 18. But you know, this was a junky piece of legislation.
Section 5 modified Section 31-26-3 definitions as used in the Victims of Crime Act to address definitions of human trafficking and sexual exploitation of children. Lastly, would modify Section 33-2-34 to include human trafficking to the list of serious violent offenses as used in that section regarding eligibility for earned meritorious reductions in imposed sentence. That would mean the 85 rule versus the day-to-day good time rule.
Yes, that when you're a serious violent, when you're designated as a serious violent offense, then you don't get day-for-day good time. You have to serve 85%. So we fight long and hard to get things, to prevent things from being moved into that serious violent felony category, because you're going to serve, like in the federal system, 85% of your time. And to me, that's detrimental to encouraging good behavior and rehabilitation. We want people in prison to seek programming, if it's available, to improve themselves. And if they're going to have a reward of a day for day good time, that might encourage good behavior, not shanking guards and other inmates, and and going to out of your way to get treatment. So all of what you've said is correct. This was a comprehensive piece of garbage.
I see. Now, did I ever tell you that I was on one of the details? This was at a prison in Georgia down in the southeast named D. Ray James. It's now become a federal facility. And I was on like a grass cutting detail or whatever. And we're walking down and there's a guy out on the yard and he's like, he's got a piece of steel like from a bunk or something like that. And he's out there on the yard just grinding it against the concrete to make it a shank. And we just walked right past him with a guard. Just kept going.
And the guard didn't see it, or he chose to not see it?
I'm pretty sure that Officer Edwards chose to not pay any attention to it, because that was F House, and F House was pretty much like a battle royale. So did you like? So that one didn't pass either.
It did not.
And that's if I did my counting right, I'll have to like employ my toes in the counting. You batted 1,000, like nothing bad passed for PFRs.
Nothing bad passed. We did have a great session. There was a comprehensive bill that passed earlier in the session, and I haven't fully reviewed it. I don't think that any of these proposals were rolled in, because otherwise they wouldn't have continued to let them live as the session progressed. But if I find out that something that we just said didn't pass, I will correct it in a future episode. But not only did we kill these bills, the advocates that work against bad criminal justice measures, they batted almost 100% on everything. There was a big effort to change our juvenile justice system and make it more like the adult system, where you could put more and more people in adult courts. And they also struck out. This state is filled with a bunch of pointy heads, and they don't seem to want to make things tougher here, even though we do have an elevated rate of crime.
What do you think is contributing to that elevation?
I wish I knew what is. I think a credible argument can be made that the penalties are relatively minor compared to our surrounding states. That could be part of it. But this place is poverty stricken. The education achievement, I think we're consistently 49th and 50th. There are a number of societal ills here. We have a high rate of alcoholism. So this place has a fair amount of dysfunctionality to it.
Isn't most, from what I've heard, isn't most crime economic in nature?
Well, that's the argument that the pointy heads make.
And if that's the case, then having better schools and better opportunities would on its own reduce crime and recidivism. If people get out of prison and they have better opportunities and jobs available to them and so forth and so on.
That's the argument that we've on the pointy head side of the aisle make, is that if people, in fact, there was a proposal in the juvenile system for a good proposal, and the conservatives were able to vilify it because it had a $2,000 monthly stipend for juveniles who had been released from custody. And I think they could collect that stipend up to their 25th birthday, as long as they were enrolled in programming and making progress. And they named that. They come up, you got to give them credit. They're very clever. They came up with that. They labeled that the homicide dividend.
Like death panels or whatever that was back with Sarah Palin.
Yes, so that was stripped out of the bill. Then I think the bill completely died. But I wasn't as focused on juvenile stuff as I was the adult stuff. But we did fairly well.
Now, I asked you this earlier today. I would like to offer out to any affiliates or advocates in the various states, if you want to put together something of a 5 or 10 minute recap of what has happened in your state, good or bad, that we could talk about it. And I would love to have you come on. You can reach out at registrymatterscast@gmail.com and we can get you on for a few minute segment. We can record it off like the normal time that we record here on Saturday nights if you need to. But I think that would be great to get a recap of what's going on around the, how many states is it now? Are we up to, we have to add 11 to the 57. So that would make it 68 states now.
So where did the 11 come from?
There's 11 provinces in Canada. Each one of those would become a state.
Well, aren't we going to do Greenland or Iceland or one of those, I think, as well?
I happened to end up on the conservative Reddit, and they were like, oh, God, there'll be 11 things for us, 11 states, so that would be good for the Senate. They didn't say anything about Greenland.
So Yeah, I've heard that one. But yes, that would be a good thing for the affiliates. And even if you're not a full-fledged affiliate, if you're mired into this effort and you're working to kill or pass good legislation, and you want to come in and share your experience, and you could even question Mr. Gloom and Doom about what he might do in a similar scenario. That would be fun. We could hopefully we could provide some guidance, because this is a tough situation. We happen to be fortunate that we have a lot of people that are working at it. It's not just me. It's not just Liberty and Justice Coalition. It's the New Mexico Criminal Defense Lawyers Association. It's the state offices of the public defender. They both commit enormous resources and expertise, and we have a good group of analysts in the legislature that will actually listen to data and information, and they will consider it. And so if you can work within a good system like we have here, your success goes up. And I will not know how to help everybody, because I don't know how your states work and I don't know what your makeup's like, but I know certain things that will work consistently if you will follow these practices. If you learn to do certain things, you'll improve your success rate dramatically.
Now, let me just call you to the mat, though. You just said something about using policy analysts or whatever and data and something like that. Didn't I hear you earlier bashing someone for using data?
You did, yes.
So, aren't you being inconsistent?
No, I'm not.
Well, then explain.
So, the data that the analysts are using is different than what we come in. We come in with reams and reams of recidivism data. They're using more solid data, like the amount of people we have incarcerated for certain type of offenses, what the trajectory has been over the last 10 years, and they're using comparables from the National Conference of State Legislatures, what other states have done, and they put that together in a comprehensive analyst report that goes to the members of the committees. And we come in with these emotional arguments. Well, recidivism is 3%. And they said, well, that's great, but I don't want to be one of the 3% that has another sexual offense committed against my family. And if you come in with different data and say, well, we can turn back the tide of criminality with shorter prison sentences, and the data shows that we can get just as much reduction in criminality with a shorter prison sentence and non-prison monitoring, strict non-prison monitoring, which is far less costly. That type of data is more compelling. And
I
so
see.
data can be used, but we obsess over one or two data points. We want to somehow believe that because recidivism is relatively low, that means that there shouldn't be any harsher treatment for PFR type offenses. And then we want to argue that the data doesn't show that there's been a dramatic reduction in sexual offending post registries, since we've had registration. Those things don't work. That's the kind of thing that PFRs want to automatically gravitate towards as a part of their arsenal of arguments.
I gotcha. I understand. Just wanted to call you out on it and get you to explain it. I understand, though.
All right.
Anything else before we do you want to cover any of these articles? Any of them are particularly funny?
Well, they're not any of them particularly funny, but I do feel on the very first one, the senator of Minnesota, I feel that his colleagues have forgotten that he's presumed innocent until he's convicted or decides to plead guilty. He's charged with soliciting sex from a 16-year-old girl that turned out to be a police officer.
And can you explain this innocent until proven guilty concept? Because I'm pretty sure it's foreign.
It seems to be this Senator Justin Eichhorn, I guess is how it's pronounced, and he
That's all I got. Yeah.
and he it says Bloomington police led Eichhorn to believe he was talking to a 17-year-old girl and then met the senator and arrested him. I don't like that happening. I'm sure they did a bait and switch. But even though he's of the opposition party, and I would not generally be breaking bread with him, he is an innocent person in the eyes of the law. He has the right to be presumed innocent for the duration of these proceedings until such time as he elects to admit guilt or to a jury returns a guilty verdict. He should not have to resign from his office. unless he chooses to resign. And they're all calling, mostly Republicans are calling for his resignation. I would expect it from the Democrat Party because he's not a Democrat, but his own colleagues, his own kind, are forgetting that he's presumed innocent. You say you put your hand on the Bible and you say you believe in the Constitution. Demonstrate that.
Police say they saw Eichhorn arriving in the area by pickup truck and arrested him without incident outside of his vehicle. Like, he happened to make a wrong turn. I mean, I know that that's not what happened, but he happened to make a wrong turn into the parking lot of the area, and he was just going to turn around, but, well, they snatched him before he could. Like, I mean, there was no victim to begin with. These are really bad. These bait and switch stings, these are really bad.
Yep. And it says that further down, it says Republicans have said dishonor to the institution. He should be immediately expelled. I don't understand that. If he's presumed innocent, what dishonor has he brought?
God, and Al Franken got kicked out for a photo that was taken 30 years ago on a USO tour.
Yes, and that was also another tragedy. But so that's the only one I really felt like talking about. The others are too controversial.
Oh, you don't want to talk about Doge email ask federal judges to explain their work? You don't want to talk about that one?
we're gonna run off every listener we've got.
All right. Well, please head over to registrymatters.co for show notes. Email registrymatterscast@gmail.com. If you are so very kind as Jake was last week, please support us on Patreon at patreon.com/registrymatters. If you have a new job and you have made a very large increase in salary, then maybe you could increase your Patreon as well. I'm just kidding. I'm not mentioning anybody specifically. And then, so you can head over to the Discord server and have chats with us as well. Anything else, Larry, before we head out?
I just say thank you, everybody. We've got a full house almost, and they continue showing up. Even Amy has shown up, so thanks, everybody.
Yeah, she's been here for like a month in a row now. Thank you, everybody, for being a patron. I really, really appreciate it. Larry and I thank you so very much for being supporters of this program, and thanks for coming and hanging out with us on a crazy Saturday night instead of watching basketball or whatever that was. And I will talk to you soon, Larry. Have a great night.
Good night.
You've been listening to FYP.